Yellow Jackets, Hawks, Eagles. From the heart of Georgia, it's the Bill Shank Show.
Hour number two of our broadcast. Welcome back. Thank you very much. I'm Bill Shanks. And Russ Brown is off today. I gave him the day off after he's been filling in for me for the last 4 days. First two were planned, last two were not. Battling a little cold here that I'm actually, knock on wood, doing a little bit better than I thought I would, so I'm feeling better. When you got a cold like this, obviously it's bad enough if you're doing anything for a living, but when you got to sit and talk for 4 hours, it's a little bit more of a challenge. So anyway, we are managing through, and I apologize in advance if you hear me cough or sneeze or sniff. I'm trying not to. I don't like doing that. I don't think you like to hear it. I don't like to hear that. So I'm trying to avoid that as much as I can and make it through. But you know how it is when you have something like this, a little congestion and wheezing and stuff like that. It's not fun, especially when the temperatures are up and down like they are. So we're making it through, and we appreciate you being with us. We'll have Jim Callis in the top of the next hour to talk a little baseball. He is with MLB.com. He will talk about the draft coming up in about a month and also about his thoughts on the first 35, 36 games of the season so far, and, of course, his thoughts on the Atlanta Braves and their young talent. So we'll have that in about an hour. I want to talk about a couple things here in this segment. And first off, they made it official today that Xavier Wheeler has signed with the Georgia basketball team. S-A-H-V-I-R. Wheeler. 5'8". He originally signed with Texas A&M, but was released from his letter of intent when the Aggies fired their head coach. He's a four-star point guard, rated the number 94th best player in the country, and rated as the number 6 rated point guard. And he's from the Houston area. So he was scheduled to go and had signed with Texas A&M, but then released after the coach got fired, and now has decided to come to play for Tom Crean in Athens. This is something that was needed as far as a point guard is concerned. Of course, they had a point guard transfer from Northeastern last week, Donnell Gresham Jr., who last season averaged almost 10 points and 3.2 assists for a team that actually appeared in the NCAA tournament. He's coming in along with the five freshmen who are all highly rated. With the addition of Wheeler, Georgia is now up to number 6 in Rivals, 8th in 247, and number 9 in ESPN.com as far as the recruiting rankings for college basketball for this year. That is unheard of. Last time they were that good in recruiting was 1992, and I think I've told you about the time where I was such a Georgia basketball fanatic that when I was in college at UGA, I hosted a college basketball recruiting show. Did that tell you anything? Yeah, and they were good that year. Hugh Durham brought in a ton of talent, Pertha Robinson, and I can't remember them now off the top of my head. Evan Pertha was one of them. Charles Claxton was one of them. It was Nick's dad. It was a great class, and that's how long it's been since they've had anything even close to what we're seeing right now. Wheeler, of course, joins Anthony Edwards, Christian Brown, Jaquan Walton, and Tumani Kamara as the others that are coming in as freshmen for Tom Crean at UGA. Edwards, the number one player in the country. He's from Holy Spirit Prep School in Atlanta. He's already signed, of course. He averaged 29 points, 9 rebounds as a senior. The Ant-Man is 6'4", 210, thought to be one of the top two or three players going into the potential NBA draft a year from now. And so he is obviously the main headliner because he's the number one player in the country. Christian Brown, 6'6", small forward, 200-pounder, four-star player from Oak Hill High School, rated as the number 62 player in the country by 247 Composite. He averaged 12.4 points, 4.4 rebounds as a senior. Jaquan Walton, another small forward, 6'6", 195, from Montgomery, the number 69 player in the country by 247. He's already signed in the early signing period, as did Tomani Camara, the 6'6", 200-pound small forward from Hollywood, Florida, who was originally from Belgium, and he is the number 96-rated player in the country by 247. So you have Wheeler, number 94, Edwards, number 1, Brown, number 62, Walton, number 69, and Camara, number 96. Five top, I guess you could say 96, five of the top 96 players in the country are coming to Georgia. And that's basketball, not football. That's what's crazy about it. And, of course, Nick Claxton still has the opportunity to come back next year. That's not out of the question. He has until May 29th to decide whether or not to remain in the NBA draft. I can't promise that that's – I don't know why he would stay in the NBA draft. I think he should come back. I don't know if he's going to be drafted or not. And these kids need to learn from what just happened in the NFL draft, don't they? They need to go back to school if they're not a guaranteed first-rounder. No one is going to begrudge any player for leaving college in order to get a first-round contract. Beyond that, good luck. Now, NFL, I know if you're second or third round, you're not going to turn that down. More than likely, you might. But NBA, there's only two rounds. If you're not a first-rounder, you don't need to go early, in my opinion. But what Tom Crean has assembled here is crazy. He's going to make me a Georgia basketball viewer. I'm not going to call fan a fanatic because, I mean, of course, I mean, I'm a Georgia grad. We're going to root for all of our teams, every sport that are at our alma mater to do well. There's no doubt about that. But he's going to make me interested. That's the thing that's the most important thing for Tom Crean. I'm sitting here on May 8th, talking Georgia basketball. I've been on, this is year 13. We've been on 12 years and 1 month. How many years have I been sitting here on the May 8th talking about the Georgia basketball signing class? Zippo. Not once. I can tell you. It hadn't happened. So for him to wrap up, or I don't know if he's finished yet. I think there's a possibility for one more, to be honest with you. But for him to continue to have this class add talent is incredible. And what he's done is incredible. And I can't wait to see how it works out. Now, six of these guys are the five freshmen, though, rather, I should say. All five of these freshmen are not going to be going to the NBA after the first year. Edwards is the only one that I think we can believe completely is a slam dunk. He gone after year one because he's on NBADraft.net as a top player in the 2020 draft. But the rest of these guys, if they're there for 2 or 3 years, they're going to make Georgia basketball better. And I think it's going to allow Tom Crean to do more to go after the players for next year's recruiting cycle. To say, look what I brought in this year. Look, I brought in five guys who are top-ranked players. I want to keep this going here. I want you to keep this going. And it's a tremendous, tremendous advantage for him. And good for him. I mean, look, we have no idea what kind of coach he is yet. He had a crappy team. It was 11-21, not a very talented team, and he needs more talent, and he's getting it. So we'll find out what kind of coach he is, and I think we have to be excited and interested by his style and how he's been able to generate that interest in this program that's been dead. Mark Fox didn't have anybody interested in Georgia basketball. It's his fault. You know why? It's his job. And he didn't. They weren't that good, and he didn't rally the troops to come watch Georgia basketball like he should have. He may have early on, but he stopped, and that was his fault. He shouldn't have done that. Tom Crean wants you to come see the Bulldogs. I think we're not going to have any problem doing that here come soon because they have been mighty impressive. All right, I wanted to mention also this note from UGA. Elijah Godwin is a freshman sprinter for the U.S. men's track and field team. And this story now, this is crazy. He's going to make a full recovery, but he got pierced by a javelin at practice yesterday. Greg McGarrity said it was truly an accident. Nobody threw anything or anything like that. He was injured when he fell into a javelin during practice on Tuesday afternoon. This is kind of gross. He suffered a javelin wound in the middle of his back and just below the shoulder blade, according to a police report that had to be made. Part of the javelin remained in Godwin's body after fire and rescue grinded off the rest of it. Oh, my God. Excuse me while I just kind of make a little thing with my back. Godwin was taken by ambulance to Piedmont Athens Regional Hospital, where the rest of the javelin was removed by doctors. God bless you, ER doctors. You people are crazy as hell for being ER doctors, because you see things like athletes coming in with a javelin stuck in their back. Are you people nuts? God bless you, but y'all are crazy. Godwin suffered a punctured and collapsed left lung, according to the report, and he's supposed to make a full recovery. The injury was caused after Godwin ran into the javelin as he and his fellow sprinters did backward sprints on the track. I hate those backward sprints. They are a pain. The javelin had been, quote, left on the ground at an angle, and Godwin was moving fast as he backed into it. It was actually the rear part of the javelin that caused the injury, which resulted in a large amount of blood in the grass. Oh, my God. He's okay, though. Full recovery, and he's lucky. That could have been awful. Elijah Godwin is his name, and he's a freshman sprinter who was doing backward sprints on the track. Lesson to be learned. Next time you're out there on that track doing backward sprints, you better watch out for those javelins left on the ground at an angle. They'll kill you. And you ER doctors, y'all are crazy. All right, I wanted to mention something here. And, you know, I've been off the air for the last time I did a show was last Wednesday. So, I mean, there's been some things happen that I'm kind of catching up with a little bit. And this is sports, and this is national. We try not to do too much national stuff. But, again, I've been sick in bed since Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, part of Wednesday up until about 1:30 today. So I've been watching a lot of television and trying to relax a little bit as I've coughed my head off. And Monday, President Trump awarded Tiger Woods the Presidential Medal of Freedom as the highest civilian honor, as you may know. And this was met with a lot of criticism. And people were saying, well, Trump and Tiger are business partners. I think Tiger has designed some courses that Trump owns. They've known each other for a long time. Tiger was even vocal in the 2016 election when I think most people expected him to come out as a black man against Tiger against Trump, that, you know, hey, look, we've known each other for a long time. We're friends. But I was amazed on Monday, and you're probably going to say, well, why were you watching CNN, you dingbat? But again, sick, full of Mucinex, Benadryl, anything I get my hands on and try to make this cough go away. Flipping around the channels and seeing on CNN a debate about whether or not Tiger Woods deserved the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Now, I'm not going to get too bogged down in whether or not CNN should have been wasting time talking about this when a lot of things were probably more newsworthy. However, regardless of what side of the fence you're on when it comes to the President of the United States right now, you cannot deny that CNN, the cable news network, is totally 100% anti-Donald Trump. If Donald Trump farts crooked, it's going to be a four-box discussion panel on CNN talking about it. And, you know, and I'm not going to bore you with my news philosophy too much, because some of you will just not really care, but we are in Macon, Georgia, in Warner Robins, Georgia, in Middle Georgia. We are not far from Atlanta, Georgia, which was the birthplace of CNN. And CNN is not even in Atlanta anymore as far as where they do the news from. Did you know that? There's no newscast, maybe a weekend newscast, I think. But as far as the daily newscast, it's all in Atlanta. And I mean, all in New York and Washington. Before, it was like, I don't know, 15 hours a day came from Atlanta. Rest came from Washington. Now it's all New York and Washington. But CNN, when it started, actually covered news. I mean, a newscast. Like if you watch, I mean, I work at 41 NBC, but I'm going to give you another example. If you watch Tucker Sargent on 41 NBC or Frank Malloy on Channel 13, they give the news. 6, 5, 6, and 11, they give the news. They sit there. They say, what's happening? They go to a package. They have a report. Boom, boom, boom. There's a car accident on Watson Boulevard. There's a car wreck on Riverside Drive. Here's what's happening in the House and County Commission. Here's what's happening in Macon Bibb. They give the news. They don't sit there and say, hey, oh, wow, let's talk about this proposal in front of the commission and bring in a four box with four analysts to talk about it. They give the news. And that's it. They don't give their opinion of the news. You don't see Frank Malloy, you know, saying, here's what I think about the governor signing the abortion bill. That's not his job. Frank and Tucker, as news anchors in this market at 13 and 41, give the news, which what CNN used to be. They used to give the news. And instead, I sat there the other day and watched Brooke Baldwin, who's a good-looking woman who's on television, interview a Sports Illustrated columnist who was absolutely flabbergasted that the President of the United States would give Tiger Woods the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Now, the only thing I have as far as a negative thought about Tiger Woods being awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom is that his career is not over yet. I think a lot of things in that regard, like Presidential Medal of Freedom or Hall of Fame, should be awarded after an athlete or a coach or whatever is finished. I don't like sometimes, even to be honest with you, when the Macon or the Georgia Sports Hall of Fames honor a coach, let's say, when he's still coaching. I don't like that. And it's nothing against the coaches, because it's been done the last couple of years for some coaches at Georgia, people that I know very well. And I think they deserve to be in the Georgia Sports Hall of Fame, but it is my preference that those people be honored after they're done, not while they're still coaching. I think it's stupid. And I only wish that Tiger Woods would have been honored by the President of the United States after his career was over. But look, Donald Trump is friends with Tiger Woods. He wanted to honor him, and he wanted to bring to light what Tiger Woods has done for the sport of golf. We can get into what he did behind his wife's back. We can get into his arrest when he got stopped there. We can get into the stories about his women. We get into all the bad stuff, all right? And a damn person probably that's gotten the Presidential Medal of Freedom that's ever been perfect. Never. But I don't know how anybody can say, and I'm not the biggest Tiger Woods fan in the world. I don't dislike him. I'm kind of indifferent about him. I mean, I hated what he did and what he did repeatedly, evidently, to his wife, which is screw around on her. I hate that. And I hate that he couldn't have been more controlled of his life. But I do understand how athletes get out of control. I think I get that. I know what happens. And you know, I'm not a golfer. But I can tell you this. What he did a couple of weeks ago in Augusta, Georgia, is one of the best stories we'll ever see in our lives. And it adds on top of what he's already done before that to a career that has been one of the most impactful careers of any athlete since you or I have been alive. Because the sport of golf is different because of Tiger Woods. And therefore, when I read he's getting the Presidential Medal of Freedom, I didn't think, oh my God, why in the world would Donald Trump give Tiger Woods the Presidential Medal of Freedom? I thought, you know what? Considering what that man has done for golf, considering what the story of his win a couple of weeks ago in Augusta, I think represents as far as never giving up and bouncing back and trying to overcome, whether it's injury like he had or personal struggles like he had. Well, what he did in Augusta a couple weeks ago was unbelievable. So I don't know why there should be outrage about Tiger Woods getting the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Now, you may make a point and a case that there are other people in this country who deserve as much or more the same honor. And I may not dispute that. But the fact that I had to sit here, I didn't have to. The fact that I sat here on Monday and watched a segment where basically the Sports Illustrated guy lambasted the fact that the president, who of course has had his own personal issues, we all know that, it's not a damn secret, is giving someone else who's had his own personal issues, that's not a damn secret either, the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and griped about it and went on and on. I just like, oh my God. And CNN, you wonder why he calls you fake news? Because you're not giving the news. And by the way, yesterday, when the kids in Colorado got shot, I flipped on the CNN to see what was going on because of the school shooting in Colorado, and all CNN could talk about was, I'll just tell you two words, Trump and impeachment. They weren't even covering the news. They were covering what is going to happen if Donald Trump and impeachment. And it's just amazing. It's amazing. And so anyway, it's kind of a two-pronged thought process that I had about what's wrong with cable news, which I know it's not news, should not be called Cable News Network anymore. I mean, and MSNBC is a joke. We know that. And Fox News can be a joke too. I'm not going to disagree with that. I'm not going to say that it can't be. It can. Because none of them give the news anymore. What is the news? You know, what is the news? But for that guy to sit on the other day and just complain because Tiger, with the audacity of the President of the United States giving Tiger Woods the Presidential Medal of Freedom when there are thousands of people in this country who deserve it more than he does. It was just a chance for them to sit there and gripe about the president is all it was, to be honest with you. And, you know, Tiger Woods, like him or hate him, you cannot say that man has not done a lot for his sport, because you'd be wrong if you did. He's done tremendous amount of positive work for his sport, including a couple of weeks ago in Augusta, Georgia. So I had no problem with him getting it. And presidents can give presidents give their friends the Presidential Medal of Freedom all the time. Go look at the list. It's littered with that kind of stuff. It's happened. Not the first time, won't be the last. All right, we're going to take a break, come back. We got some other things to talk about, including Georgia football. And some Falcons notes as well. That and more as we continue. Jim Callis, top of the hour. We're back with more here on this Wednesday right after this. .428 the time. Thanks for being with us here on the show. A couple things I want to talk about with football. The Georgia High School Association has moved the football finals to Georgia State Stadium, otherwise known as Turner Field. We remember that, right? The old Braves home, Turner Field, now the football home for Georgia State. And according to the articles, the reason is because the price to be in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium last year was twice what it had been in the past for the Georgia Dome for some reason, and they didn't want to have to pay that much. And therefore, they have moved to Georgia State Stadium. Now, the worry that people are going to have is the weather. What will the weather be in the early part of December, obviously, which can be bad. We know that. But hopefully, they'll be lucky with that. I don't blame them. I mean, you got to take costs into consideration, and I think it's a big deal for the kids to be able to go play in Atlanta. There's part of me that's kind of split on the issue of whether or not it's better for the semifinal or the finals to be in Atlanta. You know, a couple years ago when we had the finals in Warner Robins, it was kind of fun to have that Friday night feeling there of the championship game. Oh, God, it was cold that night. Rome won easily. It was not close, you know. But it was such a great environment with it was freezing. Oh, my Lord, what was it? It was below freezing that night. And that was fun just because it was in that high school environment. But I still think the finals going to a big place like Atlanta is a big deal. I wish we had a feature stadium here in Middle Georgia, kind of like Georgia State Stadium, that would be that big to be able to host that event, because, of course, Macon's the perfect location, being in the middle of the state, or Warner Robins, to be able to come to. But we don't have that, obviously. And Mercer Stadium, I don't think, is big enough for what they would need for that kind of crowd. So Georgia State Stadium is where it's going to be. We'll see how long that stays. We'll see how it feels in December. But I don't blame them. That's a lot of money. And hopefully it'll be a good environment and a good feeling for all the fans. And we'll see what happens to that. But $600,000 compared to the $300,000 they were paying before is a lot of money. All right, a couple of Falcons notes now. Michael Lombardi, former NFL general manager, mentioned today in a podcast a couple of things we learned today from Twitter that was mentioned on podcast. Michael Lombardi mentioned that the Falcons have had Mohamed Sanu available for trade during the offseason, and their asking price was a third-round pick. Of course, the trade has not happened as of yet. Did not happen before the draft, and therefore you wonder if it will still be a possibility. But did that mean the Falcons were ready to, you know, I mean, there was rumors even before the season or before the all season started, kind of gotten into gear. There was rumors the Falcons may even release Sanu, which didn't happen. They must have obviously thought that he had some value to where he could have gotten back a third rounder, which I think is a little high. It's because teams don't want to give up their draft picks. You've got to have somebody really, really good to be able to get a draft pick in return. And I would have been shocked if they'd have gotten a third-round draft pick for Mohamed Sanu. And again, draft picks, just because the value of draft picks is so off the charts now, you just don't see that happen very often. Sanu's a very good player. He's been a very good number two receiver to Julio Jones. But I can't see anybody giving up a third-rounder, and obviously they haven't. But you wonder, could it still happen, and could the Falcons feel that comfortable with Calvin Ridley, they're ready to part ways with Sanu? And even if they don't before the season starts, it could signal that at the very least, Sanu could be in his last year in Atlanta, which would mean that the Falcons have to have someone besides Ridley step up and really do something to show that they can replace Sanu, or they're going to be in the market for a receiver next year. Also today, Adam Schefter reported something kind of interesting, and that was that there were teams around Atlanta's pick at number 14 that were interested in Chris Winstrom, the guard that was taken out of Boston College, and that included number 11, the Bengals at number 11, and then also at number 18, Minnesota. So the Falcons obviously thought a lot of him to take him that high at number 14, which is high for a guard. We do wonder, of course, with the situation moving forward with Alex Mack, if he's going to be kind of toward the end of his career, and whether Winstrom can even be a center down the road. But it's obviously a very important draft pick for Atlanta. Schefter said that Winstrom was very impressive in all of his pre-draft workouts, and that it was not a surprise by anyone that Atlanta would take him that high at number 14. That was a little bit better to hear, I think, that more teams had him valued that high. And look, I think it was a little bit of a reach, but if they liked that kid enough, then they did not want the Vikings to get him at 18. it does justify, I think, the pick even more. And they need help. I'm just not going to sit here and gripe too much about them taking offensive linemen. Do I think the two they picked were reaches? Yeah, a little bit. But you know what? I'll take a reach on the offensive lineman if you think that's enough of a gamble to try to make that line of scrimmage better, because it was not last year. And it has got to be, or they're not going to do squat moving forward. That's for sure. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. All right. Now, we know that Georgia, moving to college football now, Georgia has announced this deal with Oklahoma. They're going to play in Oklahoma and also in Athens against the Sooners. And I think it's great for college football. I think to see Georgia have the type of non-conference games on their schedules for the future is outstanding. And they are, I think, doing all they can to try to not have the type of year they had last year when that schedule was an issue. You can't play Austin Peay and Massachusetts and Middle Tennessee. You can't do it. It's not going to be possible moving forward in this next decade. These cupcake games are going to have to go. And I think that teams are going to have to recognize that, and Kirby Smart and Greg McGarrity are doing just that. And I was looking here at the future non-conference opponents. This year it's Murray State, Arkansas State, Notre Dame, and of course every year is Georgia Tech. Next year they open the season in Atlanta against Virginia, ACC opponent. Then they have ULM, they have Georgia Tech every year, and then East Tennessee State as well. 2021, San Jose State, UAB. 2022, Oregon, Kent State. Then 2023, they're at Oklahoma. They open the 2024 season against Clemson in Atlanta at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. At UCLA then in 2025. The next year, they host UCLA in Athens. Then at Florida State in 2027, two non-conference games that are big matchups in 2028 at Texas and host Florida State 2 weeks later. Then how about 2029? They host Texas to start the season, and they are at Clemson 2 weeks later. Host Clemson to start the 2030. How old will you be in 2030? Did I just depress you by talking about 2030? I know. I'm sorry. I'm going to be 60. Oh, my God in heaven. Hopefully I'll make it. We hope we'll all make it to 2030, right? But think about what you're going to be in 11 years and get depressed. Don't go home and drink now, but still. 2030, they'll open the season against Clemson at home. 2031, they'll play Oklahoma at home in September. They'll open the season in 2032 against Clemson and then be at Clemson in 2033. If I'm still doing the Bill Shank Show in 2033, come get me. Just come bring the straitjacket and come get me. If it ain't the Russ Brown Show by then, whew, I don't know if I can go that long. That's a long time there. But anyway, but Georgia is doing what it can to get these cupcakes at least thinned out a little bit. And we've got to give them credit for that. I think every team should do that. And of course, we know the SEC needs to go that ninth game. It's ridiculous. And I am anxious to see when they go to Destin, which, by the way, won't be too far away because it is May 8th. When they go to Destin, how that will be on the conversation again, I will assume it will be. And I don't know how it can be avoided because it's too loud. And when you have teams like Georgia who are doing all they can to start trying to at least schedule more teams in the future that are marquee matchups that are non-conference games, you got to appreciate that. And I applaud Kirby and Greg McGarrity for doing it because they had to feel after last year that their schedule did not make, I don't know if you could say it quote-unquote hurt them, but there's no way in the world that you can say that schedule last year, the way it was with Austin Peay and all those damn teams, there's no way you can say it helped them. No way. And for a team that obviously screwed up its chance in its conference championship game to go to the Final Four, you did not need anything to not help you. And the schedule did not help Georgia at all. So for them to get Oklahoma on here and to make it a priority to strengthen that schedule moving forward, I mean, we don't even know if Kirby Smart, my God, how long is he going to be the coach of Georgia? We don't know. We have no clue. I mean, if he does great, if he wins a national championship, he may be coaching the game in 2033 at Clemson on September the 3rd, 2033. We have no clue. But still, for him to make the point and him and McGarity to get together to make sure that that schedule is going to at least have some bigger opponents, because we've talked about the show on the show many, many times. You people who are Georgia season ticket holders who pay a heck of a lot of money every year with your contribution and your season ticket prices, I mean, I wouldn't want to pay it to see Austin Peay play. I wouldn't want to pay all that money to have UMass on the schedule. Oklahoma, Texas, Clemson, you got me. UCLA even, you got me. But these cupcake teams, nah. So by them adding Florida State and Texas and Oklahoma and Oregon is on there, right? I mean, let's hope there are more to come, because I think fans are going to embrace this, and fans want it even if it's – it doesn't have to be even those kind of big-name teams. I mean, Florida State, Texas, Oklahoma, Clemson, UCLA are big-name teams. Even something like Virginia next year is not a big-name team in the ACC, but it's an ACC team, and I think people would take that too. That's in Atlanta, but still, you know, bring in some ACC. I don't care. Bring Duke into Athens. That's fine. I mean, Georgia should be heavily favored, but still, I'll take Duke or Wake Forest or Boston College compared to Austin Peay. Ugh, that's not good at all. We'll take a break, come back. We'll talk about Mike Bianchi mouthing off about Georgia. He's a columnist from Orlando. We'll talk about that. Jim Callis, top of the hour. Back with more here on this Wednesday right after this. Quarter to five is the time. Thanks for being with us here on the program. Jim Callis, top of the hour to talk baseball, draft, Braves baseball as well. Right now I want to talk about another columnist and talk show host. This one in Orlando. Mike Bianchi is his name. He writes for the Orlando Sentinel. And has a talk show down there. Now, look, excuse me, I have a little bit of coughing fit here. I try to be someone who doesn't go off on tangents too much. Gonna have to excuse me just a minute. Okay. I don't want to cough in your ear there. I try not to go off on too many tangents just for the hell of it, is what I was trying to say. Yeah, I go off on tangents, but I try not to do it just because I'm on the radio. I'm a passionate fan with my teams. It's not fake. If I didn't have a talk show, before I had a talk show, obviously, I was in broadcasting, but before I had a talk show and couldn't go off on the Georgia Bulldogs or the Braves, I would call my friends and do it. So I'm a passionate fan of my teams, and I'll always be like that. I've stopped doing the show next week, and I'm always going to be a passionate fan who will probably be calling my friends and griping about something, complaining about something, talking about something. But I try not to say, well, you know, I got a talk show. I'm going to go on there and say something outrageous just for ratings or for an outrage or for, no, I try not to do that. Mike Bianchi's not that type, though. He does try to do that. And he's had some things to say that I think have kind of gotten the ire of Georgia fans. The first thing he said was on the Paul Feinbaum show, he said, Georgia needs to enjoy the superiority they have in the SEC East right now, because Dan Mullen is going to quickly turn the tables in that rivalry. Now, when Dan Mullen took over at Florida, he made a few comments, and I kind of laughed them off because he made a few cracks at Georgia. And, you know, he was talking to his fan base, which his fan base hates Georgia. They want to beat Georgia. and therefore, you know, he was playing to his base. Just like a politician. I'm going to play to my base. Boom. I want to say the things. They're going to make them excited, get them going, rile them up. Boom, boom, boom. And that didn't bother me. You know, he's made a few other remarks here, obviously, this year, including a couple of weeks ago about the attendance for the spring game that was referencing the amount of time it had been since Georgia had won a national championship. And, okay, whatever. You know, Kirby, I hadn't correct me if I'm wrong, I haven't had Kirby take any shots at Florida. Whatever. If he wants to continue that, let him go ahead. Georgia beat Florida last year, and will probably be the favorites to do it again this year. Dan Mullen wants to try to get into some pissing contest in the media about the Georgia-Florida rivalry. Go ahead. You know, go ahead. I understand the history of the rivalry and how that's gone with Spurrier and Urban and things that have happened and celebrating in the end zone and all that. I understand. I get it. You know, I know it's a rivalry. We hate them. They hate us. Fine. Bianchi had to go a little step further, though, and had to talk about the fact that it was in his opinion that 14,000 days since Georgia has won a national championship kind of cements the fact that Georgia is the most overrated program in college football. And he wrote in his column, the genesis of this hilarious Twitter tussle began last Thursday when Florida fans began mockingly referring to Georgia's 14,000 day and tweeting out the number 14,000. You're probably thinking, what is 14,000 day? Well, it's the anniversary of the last time Georgia won a national championship. And then he goes into how many things have changed since then and so forth. And he calls the went over the Notre Dame team in 1981 kind of a fluke. If not for Herschel Walker, if not for this, that, and the other, it wouldn't have even happened. So, obviously, Bianchi in the middle of the state of Florida is playing his base and talking about the team that he covers and so forth, and it's kind of trying to add fuel to the fire. Again, I think just because it's May and he ain't got nothing better to do. He has nothing better to do than to try to stir up some crap about Georgia, Florida, and it's May. It's May 8th, dude. It's May 8th. Now, and someone got on Twitter today and said this is the same Mike Bianchi who said that Will Muschamp was going to survive and that Jim McElwain was a great choice to replace Will Muschamp. So take that with a grain of salt. And again, Bianchi's one of those, I mean, he's kind of a poor man's white Stephen A. Smith. It is kind of likes to push buttons, likes to try to stir up controversy, likes to be crazy on his show. And, I mean, we all can be a little crazy. I'm not saying that I'm calm here, for crying out loud. But you know what? Just to stir stuff up like that, knowing you're going to get headlines in a regional manner, a little ridiculous. Now, here's the thing. I know that there are a lot of people believe that since Georgia has only won the national championship in 1980, now I think they won a couple others, but that's another story. As far as the modern era, let's say, that, and I think Bianchi even said it, you know, the Georgia fans think more highly of themselves than they really are. Well, I think every fan base does that. Georgia Tech fans think they are unbelievably great because, you know what? That's their team. They have a right to be feeling that way. No matter how mediocre they've been since the Rose Bowl, which is a 500 team, they have a reason to believe of how good they are. Do Georgia fans get out of control thinking their poop doesn't stink sometime? Absolutely. I'll admit to that. Heck almighty, I'm not going to deny that. But I think my problem with this is for him to say the most overrated program in college football. Look, that's more of an indictment on Mark Richt than anybody, probably, because of the times that they were rated highly and they've disappointed. Kirby Smart's going into year 4. I think he's obviously a very unfinished product. And yes, I know the tweet that someone shared with me about the similarities in Richt and Smart's numbers through the first 3 years. But like with Mark Richt and how he felt then, we now feel about Kirby Smart that it's up to Kirby Smart And this is why he was hired, to get them to that next level and to finally achieve the expectations that have been on this program for some time. I don't think any daggum Georgia fan needs to apologize for believing that because of where the school is located, the resources it has available, the talent that's in its own backyard, that it should not be better. Does that mean that at times we thought they were going to be better than they actually were? Well, yeah, we did. And there have been times I thought, you know, hey, we're going to win the national championship this year because we had talent to do so. Things happened, it didn't happen. Does that mean they're overrated, the most overrated team program in college football? Well, maybe. Maybe that's true. Maybe there's a little bit of truth to that. But again, my Bianchi is trying to do one damn thing here and light a fire between Georgia and Florida, get clicks on his website, get calls on his talk show, and he's probably succeeding. I just don't know what the story is, really, because last year when Dan Mullen played Georgia, he lost. Now, if Dan Mullen comes back this year and beats Georgia, which could happen, that ain't out of the question, then maybe we can hear a little bit of that talk. But until they beat Georgia, do me a favor, shut the hell up, because you sound stupid. You really, really do. All right, we're going to take a break, come back. Jim Callis will join us. We'll talk baseball, we'll talk Braves, we'll talk MLB draft. Then we'll take your phone calls here on this Wednesday edition of the Bill Shank Show.